NASA admits it buried a safety study unflattering to the airlines. NATCA says the FAA is attempting to spin a controller shortage. And two single-engine planes land safely after a midair. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, October 23rd, 2007. The FAA has consistently told us we're safe and getting safer when we fly the airlines. Despite increasing volume, controller labor unrest, infrastructure consolidation, and airline cost cutting, conspiracy theorists claim that much goes on in government that we're never told. Today, it's hard to call them theorists. NASA has admitted that it ended, then buried the results of, a four-year airline pilot survey because publication of the results would have rattled the public's perception of airline safety. A person familiar with the survey, speaking anonymously, told the Associated Press the pilot said near collisions and runway incursions occur as much as twice as often as the government's official numbers. The survey also reportedly discovered a high number of in-close approach changes or urgent last-minute instructions to pilots to alter a landing approach. NASA had a contractor survey about 24,000 commercial and general aviation pilots over nearly 4 years. Then, it shut down the project at the start of 2005. The AP source said he was stonewalled through 14 months of Freedom of Information requests. Last week, NASA ordered the contractor to purge the survey results. Associate NASA Administrator Thomas S. Luedtke says the agency didn't want the public's confidence in airlines shaken, which could affect airline profits. North Carolina Congressman Brad Miller is not happy. Quote, "If the airlines aren't safe, I want to know about it. I would rather not feel a false sense of security because they don't tell us. There is a faint odor about it all," unquote. Whoever blew the whistle may have achieved his aim. Officials at NASA's Ames Research Center now say they'll publish a report by the end of this year, almost 3 years after the study was shut down. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association held a teleconference for the press Monday morning to answer FAA claims on Friday that it exceeded its fiscal year 2007 controller staffing targets. Union President Patrick Forey started by noting the late Friday afternoon timing of the FAA's press release, too late for a response to be picked up by weekend media coverage. NATCA had 2 points to make in its press conference. First, that FAA staffing numbers hide the fact that control towers are increasingly staffed by inexperienced new hires, while career controllers continue leaving as soon as eligible for retirement. NATCA's second point, that the FAA is consistently and increasingly underestimating retirement levels. Forey noted that the FAA has traditionally required applicants to have completed an FAA-accredited college degree program or relevant military air traffic experience. This year, to make its HR quota, Forey says the agency has recruited on MySpace and other personal networking websites, and even ads on the sides of buses to get enough warm bodies in the door. Forey notes that former Administrator Marion Blakey's predictions that controllers choosing to retire as soon as eligible would be acting against their own self-interests has turned out to be as badly wrong as other FAA projections. He noted that of 856 retirements in fiscal 2007, only 16 of those were controllers who'd reached the mandatory retirement age of 56. You can read more of the union's response in the print version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. Tomorrow's ANN special feature will let you actually listen in on Monday morning's press teleconference and reporter Q&A. Two single-engine planes on approach to Republic Airport in Farmingdale, New York, collided about 5 miles from the runway Sunday night at 1,100 feet. Both made safe landings with no injuries. Airport officials told Newsday a Cessna 152 suffered damage to its windscreen and wing, and a Piper PA-32 Saratoga lost 12 inches off a wing and had a fuel tank punctured. A landing light from one of the aircraft was reportedly found in the front yard of a home under construction in nearby Dix Hills. FAA spokeswoman Arlene Salek said both planes were operating VFR and were returning to Republic when the accident took place. It was not immediately known if either plane was in contact with a tower at Republic. The cockpit voice recorder from an ill-fated Indonesian airliner has provided a glimpse into why the nation's air travel industry is under fire from international regulators. The Garuda flight overran a runway in Indonesia March 7th. 21 people died and more than 100 others suffered terrible burns when the plane came to rest in a rice paddy and burst into flames. Indonesia's National Transportation Safety Committee found the pilot was singing during the approach, violating Garuda's sterile cockpit rules, and later fixated on landing the aircraft, ignoring 15 loud alarms in the cockpit and 2 warnings from his co-pilot. Australia's The Age reported investigators also found the co-pilot failed to follow company procedures, requiring him to take control when the pilot ignored the warnings. Garuda itself could not provide evidence of simulator training for flight crews in how to respond to warnings. Indonesia's Directorate General of Civil Aviation was also faulted for its oversight. Authorities had checked the plane's safety and airworthiness only twice in almost a decade. The list goes on and on. The airport did not meet international runway standards. Its emergency vehicles were substandard and unable to reach the crash site. The plane burned for more than 2 hours after the crash. In June, the European Commission blacklisted all 51 airlines based in Indonesia, denying them landing rights anywhere in Europe starting July 6th, after concluding that the nation's aviation safety standards were below international minimums. Up next on ANN, NASA rolls the dice on heat shield tiles. China's first lunar probe could launch this week. And hedge funds are making Delta pilots nervous. You're listening to Aero News.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 23rd, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. NASA was still on track as of late Monday for Tuesday morning's scheduled launch of Space Shuttle Discovery at 11:38 a.m. But forecasters say there's still a 60% chance bad weather could scrub the launch. Possible launch times for Wednesday and Thursday appear to offer better odds when it comes to weather. The launch will be watched closely, especially by engineers who thought the mission should have been delayed to repair degraded heat tiles. Program manager Wayne Hale said last week, the agency ruled the issue posed an acceptable risk, unquote, saying the issue has cropped up on past shuttle flights without leading to catastrophic failure. Quote, and let me make sure you understand that. I didn't say it's safe to go fly, and I wouldn't say that. We have an acceptable risk to go fly, unquote. NASA is under deadline pressure to complete the International Space Station before the shuttle fleet is retired in 2010. See also human factors, comma, get their itis, unquote. Launch watchers have something much more novel than STS-120 in their sights this week. The AP reports the launch window for China's first lunar probe is Wednesday through Friday this week. China is engaged in an Asian space race with Japan, which just placed its own mapping probe in lunar orbit, and India, which will launch an unmanned lunar mission of its own in April next year. Li Guoping, a spokesman for the China National Space Administration, told reporters the probe has completed ground tests and is ready. He says the craft will orbit the Earth during technical adjustments, then enter the Moon's orbit by November 5th. Pilots for Delta Airlines are reportedly becoming concerned about hedge funds, which appear to be betting that Delta's stock is in for a fall. American Business Daily reports the Delta Pilots Union is considering amassing a $1 million merger assessment fund to allow them to hire legal counsel in the event merger speculation turns out to be true. Hedge funds are not what they used to be. A hedge in an investment portfolio refers to an investment which is negatively correlated to your other assets. For example, if you're concerned about rising energy prices, you buy oil company stocks. If you're concerned about runaway monetary inflation, you might buy gold or commodities. Hedge funds used to be built on this premise. They would hold investments which would protect you from downturns in your other investments. But in today's vernacular, hedge fund is the name applied to any fund which takes on high risks to chase high returns. In Delta's case, some of the big funds are shorting the stock, which simply means borrowing shares of Delta, selling them off, and then betting they can be replaced cheaper later when they're due back. This is essentially a bet on the company's stock to decline. At some point, Wall Street jitters can turn these massive short positions into self-fulfilling prophecies. Bloomberg reports the shorting of Delta stock reached 8.9% of total shares on September 28th. That's up 84% just since June. These are all bets that Delta's recent terrific financial performance will be short-lived, or that a merger will make the stock less valuable. The airline, which just came through a bankruptcy, also has a limited time to enjoy the financial concessions from its union employees before new contracts will have to be negotiated, which could reduce profitability. During bankruptcy, Delta convinced its creditors they should reject a hostile takeover bid from U.S. Airways, valued at $10.3 billion, because the airline would emerge from Chapter 11 worth between $9.4 and $12 billion. Those creditors may be kicking themselves now. Delta's stock closed at $20 even on Monday. That puts Delta's total market cap at about $4.8 billion. Which just goes to prove the old saying, 10.3 billion birds in the hand beats 12.4 billion in the bush, or something like that. Meanwhile, over at United, employee unions that coughed up big wage concessions and watched pensions disappear during bankruptcy are crying foul over CEO Glenn Tilton's talk of selling off maintenance and cargo operations. If, during bankruptcy, these were parts of the company crucial to its operation, how come they're for sale now? More important, if they'd been sold off before bankruptcy, could pensions have been saved, or bankruptcy avoided in the first place? Tilton says 250 individual initiatives have been launched in an attempt to improve profitability. These ideas include the divestitures of cargo and maintenance operations, and even its frequent flyer program, while spending $4 billion on aircraft and reservation upgrades to improve the customer experience. He also wants to look at lots of new ways to nickel and dime passengers, including an option to pay an extra fee to have your luggage appear first on the carousel and baggage claim. Tilton has also warned that if major U.S. airlines don't explore further consolidation through mergers, they are, quote, not even going to be in the top 10 in a little while, unquote. Still ahead, it's NIMBY versus NIMBY in Southern California. A citation crew takes off from a taxiway. And here's the real reason TSA doesn't want you carrying drinks on board. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, October 23rd, 2007. I'm Paul Plack. If you've ever dumped a cup of coffee with cream and sugar down your computer keyboard, maybe you'll feel better when you hear this story. Tempers flared in a screening line at New York's LaGuardia Airport on Saturday when passengers were kept standing in line for hours due to an equipment malfunction. CBS News reports an X-ray machine inside American Airlines Terminal D went down after a vendor spilled tomato juice on it. When informed of the reason for the delay by TV reporters, passengers couldn't believe the most modern technology available to the Transportation Security Administration could be brought down by a can of V8. A spokesman for the TSA, who declined to give his name to the TV station, shrugged the incident off. Quote, "That's the risk you take when you deal with technology," unquote. Could this be the real reason we're not allowed to carry open drinks through security lines? An interesting development in California is pitting NIMBY against NIMBY. The Los Angeles City Council settled its own NIMBY dispute in 2005 by agreeing to cap passenger volume through Los Angeles International Airport at 78.9 million people per year and look for ways to spread further increases in growth out regionally. Among the reliever airports envisioned were John Wayne Airport near Newport Beach and a new international airport to replace a decommissioned Marine Corps air station at El Toro. But both those sites are in Orange County, and voters there restricted growth at John Wayne and decided they didn't want an El Toro airport developed at all. So now, an idea being floated in Los Angeles is a special fee, charged only to Orange County residents using LAX in honor of their selfishness. Naturally, Orange County politicians are outraged. Legal experts are skeptical that the impact fee will be legal. In the meantime, traffic at LAX is at about 77% of the cap that was passed in 2005, and it continues to grow. Have you ever noticed that when airports make their taxiways too wide and pretty, they're easy to mistake for runways? Me neither. But the crew of a Cessna Citation 525 has been immortalized in an NTSB report for making that mistake at Memphis International Airport on October 11th. NTSB reports the tower controller cleared November 241 Echo Papa for takeoff on runway 36 left at 7:40 p.m. while the plane was still on taxiway November. The crew acknowledged, but then began the takeoff roll on the taxiway. Meanwhile, on taxiway Mike, a Pinnacle Airlines regional jet was holding at M6. The FAA estimated the citation overflew the CRJ-2 by 500 feet or less. The controller may have jumped the gun a little bit, but in all fairness, he did warn the crew of the citation twice before the plane lifted off. The FAA wrote this one up as a pilot deviation. And finally, bad jokes ahead. You've been warned. What's in a name? For that matter, what's in a three-letter airport identifier? Would Rush City Regional by any other name than ROS smell so sweet? For that matter, would you be surprised to be stuck for the night at KOA in Hawaii? Or to find a public exercise facility at BUF in Western New York? Three-letter IATA airport identifier codes are supposed to be an inside matter, but some actually become common names for their airports, such as LAX or even GSP. Or for entire cities. Here in the Pacific Northwest, lots of people use the identifier PDX interchangeably with Portland. So it's important that these designators be chosen with care. And that's just the point in Sioux City, Iowa. Or, as its airport is known, SUX. Unless you're a fan of the movie RoboCop, SUX brings to mind one thing, and it's generally derogatory. City fathers have been asking for years to get it changed. In 1988, the FAA notified the city that GAY was available. For some reason, no one got behind that one. But now the city has decided to make lemonade. SUX board member Dave Bernstein hatched an idea to make the three-letter identifier a memorable joke, and the Sioux City Journal reports the campaign was officially unveiled last month. Sales are reported brisk for Fly SUX t-shirts and caps, and the airport's new website is www.flysux.com. And the joke is apparently working. Bernstein tells the paper, quote, "I've got buddies that I went to college with in different cities that can't even remember their own birthdays, but they all know the Sioux City designator, SUX. As long as they're talking about you, go with it," unquote. And that's the latest from Aero News. Or use our three-letter designator, ANN. Talk about us and we'll go with it. Just don't confuse us with Annette Island Airport in Alaska. And remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Alan Klapmeyer of Cirrus Design talks with ANN's Jim Campbell about his company's possible bid for Columbia Aircraft. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.